I appreciate the opportunity to be back with you here at Little Miami. Last trip wasn't all that profitable for us. When I got here, Nancy got sick that night and stayed at the motel, and so I was blessed to be here on that Saturday morning and then had to go home, but I guess you forgave me from that because you invited me back, so we're thankful to be here. I thought of the fact, and I appreciate your prayers, not only for the meeting, but Nancy's to have some surgery on the 2nd, and I'm supposed to have back surgery on the 4th, so I'm giving her 2 days to get ready. But I do appreciate your prayers very much. This morning, as I begin to think, and not only this morning, but through the week and even last night, of what we might try to speak on, it's always a challenge sometimes. Many times you have a subject on your mind, you feel like it's definitely from the Lord, and time tells whether that was true. A lot of times, though you have subjects on your mind, you may not have one quite as deeply impressed as you do at other times. This morning, I'm thankful to have two subjects kind of on my mind, and I hope to be able to maybe tie them together a little bit. I've used both of them in the past, but they seem to be what most impressing, and again, I would ask for your prayers. As we live in this world, there are some things we really need. We need God's grace. We need the love of each other. We need to figure out how to overcome obstacles in life and challenges. We have so many illnesses and sicknesses. Sometimes, as the brother said, it may not always be physical. Sometimes it can be emotional. Sometimes it can be discouragement. And we have to be able to overcome them. If we can't overcome them, we have a very dreary future in front of us. This morning, what I'd like to try to speak to you on is the thought of living with grace but walking in love. And we need them both very, very much. You know, the Lord teaches so often the need for us to pray, need for us to sing in the Spirit, to pray in the Spirit, to preach in the Spirit. We constantly need the Lord's presence in our lives. And if there's any one subject this morning I'd like to primarily speak to you on, I'd like to try to describe what love is. Now, we know scripturally he gives us a description, a very able description in the Corinthian letter. And we'll turn over there in a moment and go through some of that. But the Corinthian church was a church that had everything imaginable. They wanted prophecies. They boasted because of some of their status. But they weren't a perfect church. There is no perfect church. They had people that didn't believe in the resurrection in the church. They had fornication in the church. And I think when you get over to 1 Corinthians 13, they had the lack of love in the church. It's very easy. How many of us every day tell our husbands or wives, I love you? But, or your children, you tell them you love them. Or those little children, after they've been naughty, coming and telling you, I love you. We do that all the time. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. But love is a whole lot more than that. That's true in the church. We can tell each other every day that we love each other, every Sunday morning or whenever we happen to meet. But love goes beyond just telling someone you love them. A number of months ago, I heard a song, and I mentioned this recently, that we should love the ones God gave you because one day he'll want them back. And if you think about that a moment, we're not promised tomorrow. We're not promised next week. We're not even promised a minute from now. Sister Debbie mentioned about some of her family that died of a heart attack. It's all around us. But I want us to think very deeply with this thought that if we love someone and we show them that love, it's not just telling them. You know, the Lord even teaches us that it's not enough to say, I'm going to do the will of the Father or walk in the will of the Father, but you actually have to do it, not just say it. When we look over in the Corinthian letter, and I said in order to do the things that God gave us, if you read in Galatians 5, he gives us the explanation of the fruit of the Spirit or what was included in the fruit of the Spirit. But when I talk about living with grace, we need that in order to walk in love. I told him when I preached on this the first time, and I said, I'm going to preach on living with grace. I clarified it right away and said, I do not have a girlfriend named Grace. Her name's Nancy, been around a long time, and we get along pretty well for 40-some years. But we still need to live with it. We need to have it. We need to possess it. Somebody said, well, the Lord gives it. How can you possess it? Well, it's like someone gives you $1 million, but that doesn't necessarily mean you taking advantage of it and enjoying it and walking in it. But in 1 Corinthians 13, we give the great description of love. But in order to understand what our love to each other should be, we have to understand God's love to us. If we turn just to a couple verses over in the 13th chapter of the Gospel of John. He tells us in the latter couple verses, a new commandment in verse 34, I give unto you that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. That's a pretty difficult task, isn't it? To love one another as Christ loved us. In fact, when I look at it, it's almost an impossible task, but yet it's not something that we should neglect in our lives. It's not something we shouldn't try. There was a brother one time at a church I served in Georgia, and every time I met him, I said, how you doing today? He said, well, I'm doing better. And my first thought was, well, are you sick or have you been sick? And I finally learned what that meant, that he's just doing better. He's enjoying the service more. He's enjoying coming to the house of God. And it's okay everybody shows up on Sunday morning. And it's okay that we enjoy the gospel and we enjoy each other's fellowship and the Lord's communion. But what's even more important is that we take that feeling with us and live it each day we live. That we thank God every morning for the beautiful day he's given us. That we thank God for having each other, realizing that it's one more day the Lord's provided us with our husband or wife or children. We've lost several recently in our part of the country, from the church and just in the community itself. And you know, you hear the same thing. I tried to preach a funeral just a couple weeks ago of a lady that hadn't been to church for years and years. But a couple weeks before she passed, I went and visited her, and there was no doubt in my mind that she had the love of God dwelling in her heart. Now, I'm not going to tell you or her that it's all right not to go to church. But what I am telling you, that if Jesus Christ can save a thief on a cross, that to my knowledge never had walked, in fact he was a thief, never walked right, wasn't baptized, and if Christ could save someone like that, I believe that a lot of times we don't do what we're supposed to here. But God, in spite of what we are and what we do, just poor sinners. The hymn writer wrote the words, "Poor, weak, and worthless though I am, I have a rich, almighty friend." So he tells us that we should, a new commandment I give unto you, that you should love one another. And then he says in verse 35, "By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another." That you have love. And again, I stress that's not saying or just not, he's not telling us just to tell everybody once a week that I love them. But show them. Show them that you love them. In over in the Epistle of John, I think it's the 5th chapter. In fact, if you ever wanted any evidence that you're a child of God, go over to the 5th chapter of the book of John, or the 1st Epistle of John, because he tells us, and I forget how many times now, but a number of times in this chapter he tells us evidence that you're a child of God. And that's our desire. And for us to believe that one day we'll live with him in eternity gives us even more strength and courage, more, praying for more grace. He says, and let me just read a couple of these if I can find them. He says in verse 7, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God." Then he talks about those that don't. I think over in the first verse of this particular chapter, or the down just a little bit further, he talks about we are of God. He that knoweth God heareth us. He that is not of God heareth us not. And so on and so forth. But you can go read that chapter sometime. So for us to understand what this love is all about in 1 Corinthians 13, we need to understand and realize that God loves us. He didn't love us. I listened to a couple evangelistic preachers this morning in the motel room, and needless to say, part of it was all right. Sometimes part of it is, but part of it's not good enough usually. They talked about God's grace. One of them even said, "Well, you're saved by grace. Nothing you can do. Now's your opportunity to accept him to obtain that eternal life." Well, if people would realize how contradictory that is. But God loved you, God died for you, or Christ died for you, and one day he's going to come back for you. From that standpoint, your reservation is secure. It's secure. He's made us accepted in the beloved. So let's look now. Knowing that, he tells us a lot about the Corinthian church. The Corinthian church, if you compare the book of Corinthians or either book of Corinthians to, let's say, the book of Philippi, you're going to find in the book of Philippi that he never one time criticized them for a major error in the church. Now, that didn't mean they didn't have some. I'm not saying no church is perfect, but I'm not saying they didn't have some, but he even told them on one occasion in Philippian letter, he said, "I thank God upon every remembrance of you." He even told him, "You're my joy and crown." And, of course, if you want to read about the constitution of the church at Philippi, go to Acts chapter 16. You'll find how it started with Lydia and the Philippian jailer and so on. But if you look at the Corinthian church, he was constantly rebuking them. I've already mentioned some of the things he rebuked them for. And when we begin to look at this particular church, their problem, they were manifesting nearly every spiritual gift in existence. They, again, manifested prophecies and so on. But they weren't walking in love one to another like they should. We're told, and I believe as often as love's mentioned in the Bible, what matters most to us, and I want you to hear this, what matters most to us is not if we possess some flashy gift or have a great amount of wealth. What matters most is not how famous we are or how popular we are. What matters most in our lives as children of God is how well we love. And let's look at this chapter now. And he tells us some of these things right at the beginning. But let's begin by looking in verse 4. I'm going to look at some of these terms. And what I want us to do today is try to put ourselves in this light. In other words, where do I fit in this? Do I do this? Or do I not? I told my wife at the beginning of the year, my resolution, if you can call it that, is to treat her better. Now, I thought I treated her pretty good for 46 years, but I told her I'd try to treat her better. And so after church, you can ask her how that's went. And then let me know. Any case, in this particular verse, he tells us a lot of features of love. Love, again, is not just something you say. It's not just something. In fact, more love is shown in action. Love is certainly a noun, but it's also a verb in the sense that we have to love one another. That denotes something on our part we've got to do. He tells us in verse 4, and I'm just going to pick some of these out and then try to describe them a little bit. And again, let's compare it to ourselves. He says it suffereth long. What would you think if I told you something suffereth long? What does that mean to you? Well, we probably could have a variety of explanations or definitions of it. But I'm going to give you just one I pick out, and some of it's based on the original language. Some of it's just common, I guess you could say, biblical knowledge. But suffering long, you know, God suffereth long. If you think about it, why are we here today? Well, we're here because of his grace, but we're here because he suffereth long. Have we ever sat down and just looked at ourselves and say, well, look at all we've done in the past. Look at all the sins we've committed. What have we done today? You know, sins among God's people, or at least in my life, are not always sins of going out and doing something. But sometimes they're sins of omission. They're sins of where I should be doing something that I'm not doing. And so he says it suffereth long. What does that mean? I'm going to just tell you it means patient endurance. It means to keep on the track. It means that if you've got love, have you ever said you love someone and then that someone does something to you? Maybe they talk about you. You hear so much anymore about young people and bullying in schools and people have taken their own lives bullying with some of the social media different things we have today, like Facebook and so on. And people react to those things different ways. We've had a couple recently that just committed suicide, and I'm going to tell you right now, that's no way out. You just think a moment of what that will do to your family, what it will do to husbands and wives, what it would do. A family we know very well, just recently, they were in their 50s. He killed her, and then he took his own life. And I just can't fathom that. But you don't know what's going through people's minds. But he tells us that it's patient endurance, I believe, under, I'm going to insert the word provocation. Sometimes we can be provoked. It's very difficult when we're provoked to respond in love, isn't it? Have you ever had somebody just walk up and tell you something? Or maybe worse yet, they go out and tell somebody else and they tell you. And maybe it's an attack on you or your character or something else. Maybe it's an attack on how you live or how you're raising your family or how you're doing this or that. But yet it says, suffereth long, being long-tempered. You know, the Apostle Paul tells us that we should, if I can get the verse right offhand, he talks about, maybe I'll get it in a minute, but he deals with the subject of not letting the sun, or be ye angry, but sin not, and let not the sun go down upon your wrath. That's a sense in which it would be better to take care of a problem. And you know the best way to take care of something? This is true in the church, or it's true in the world, that if somebody does something to you, or says something about you, you know who you're supposed to go to? That person. You don't need to spread it on Facebook. You don't need to spread it through the church. If you've got a problem, you go to that person and resolve it. Try to take care of it. I can think of a lot of cases in school when I don't have much memory, but I get some memory of some of the things I did in school. And I'm not about to tell you what some of them are right now. We're just going to forget all about them. But there were a lot of times when people would say something to me or say something about me. I remember the only time I was ever sent to the principal's office was in PE, and I hated PE. I don't know if they still have it or not, but I hated it. And this boy that didn't have a whole lot of character about him, I guess. And, you know, I probably didn't know a whole lot then either. But in any case, he kept throwing this basketball at me in PE. And there was no reason. I didn't know him that well even, other than he was in PE. And I finally got irritated with it and went up and hit him in the face. And he hit me back. You know, if I'd have known that, I'd never hit him the first time. But we got sent to the principal's office. And of course, that boy had a big reputation. And I thought, just wait till my dad finds out about it. That's the only time I ever remember I liked a principal, is he didn't tell my dad about it. And he just let it alone. Now, is that the way I should have responded? No, I should have just ignored it. Or went to him and said, don't do this anymore. You know, we're to cast our bread upon the waters. We're to give a portion to seven and also to eight. And I realize that's more of a spiritual aspect. But he said, for it shall return after many days. What did that mean? That just means you go on doing what you're supposed to do, and it's going to come back to you. It's it, it may not be. Now, our inward, Paul said, I find law in my members, that when I do good, evil is present with me. But that's not what we feel like doing a lot of times. We feel like going on the attack. But he said it suffereth long. It's, in other words, love does not retaliate. True love does not retaliate. What about Jesus Christ when he hung on that cross? What did he say? They spit upon him. They gave him vinegar and with gall to drink. They did everything imaginable. They platted a crown of thorns and beat it down on his head. And what did he say? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. I would say that's true love. He didn't retaliate against them. What about Stephen when he was being stoned? And, you know, that was the case when he saw heaven opened and Jesus Christ standing on the right hand of the Father. And what did he say? He said, Father, lay it not to their charge. Why not? We probably, some of us, anyhow, would have been feisty with that. We'd have been angry. We would been ready to get even. And he says, it suffereth long. Not only that, there's a lot of times, I've related this experience or this story a few times. Abraham Lincoln, back in his day, was a very wise man. Now, do presidents make mistakes? I don't think there's any question presidents make mistakes. But there was a man called Stanton, and I can't get his first name right now, but he was called Stanton, and he called President Lincoln a low, cunning, crafty gorilla. And he said, you don't need to go to Africa to see gorillas. All you need to do is look in Springfield, Illinois, and you'll see a gorilla named Abraham Lincoln. Well, it came up that Abraham Lincoln needed a Secretary of War, if I remember the position. And after he looked quite a lot at who he wanted, he picked Mr. Stanton. And somebody thought he was crazy. Here's a man that called you a gorilla. And you want to put him as Secretary of War? Somebody finally asked Mr. Lincoln, he said, why do you want him in that position? Because he said he's the best man for the job. Now, how many of us, if somebody called us a gorilla and meant it, how many of us would even ever talk to them again? Now, I'm not saying we got to have fellowship with everybody that treats us bad. We're just told that if somebody smites you on one cheek, turn the other. It's the fact that love goes beyond what many times we even fathom in our lives or what we think we can put up with. He said he's the best man for the job. When Abraham Lincoln was assassinated in that theater and his body laid in state, Mr. Stanton came by with tears in his eyes and said, this is the greatest leader this world has ever known. Now, what would have happened had Mr. Lincoln not practiced love like it should be practiced? We're told in verse 4 also, love is kind. I think this is what is described as an active goodness that goes out on the part of an individual to others. It's kind. Have you ever, sometimes people can say things to you, but say them in the wrong way. Have you ever, it's like preaching the gospel. If I got everybody mad before I even started this morning, would you really listen? You know, Paul told the Galatian church, "Oh, foolish Galatians," one time, "who hath bewitched you?" But what's important here is to be kind in love. Love is kind. That's what he tells us here. Love is kind. What does that mean? It basically means it's not hateful. It's not evil. When we respond to someone, and some of these kind of overlap a little bit, but when we respond to someone that maybe does say something, we can be kind about it. I remember one time a preacher was talking about the three little pigs. You know that story. And he said you can put it two ways. He said you can put it, well, once upon a time, there were three little educated swine that contemplated building an edifice beside of the road to withstand the outside evil. Now, that didn't sound too bad, did it? But on the other side, you could put it, you know, there were three swine, and some of them just, they didn't know what was going on. They were crazy, some of them. And how do you put that? It's the same way as I said preaching the gospel. How are we to preach the gospel? In love. We're to preach the gospel in love. I've known preachers through my life that they presented it, and what they said was good. But I tell you what, you thought they were the maddest person in the world when they were preaching. And fortunately, we don't have much of that. But at the same time, we're to be portraying that kindness. We're to just, you know, just say it in the right way. It's not a lot of times what you say, it's how you say it. If you correct your children, we had five, and when they were young, did we ever yell? Probably a lot. In fact, I'm sure we did. We sometimes yelled. I admire these parents now. Now, I'm not excusing discipline. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But love is kind. You know, you explain it to them. We had one child that was stubborn. I mean, he was stubborn. Every imaginable way. And one child, you could just tell them something, and they would almost swell up in tears. And this one, it didn't matter what you did. You know, they were stubborn. It's like a preacher said one time about his father-in-law, and his father-in-law was an old Indian, and he couldn't go to church, and so he finally went with them, and he wasn't Primitive Baptist, and he was so mad when this sermon was preached one time, and he said, "I wouldn't believe that if it was the truth." He was so angry. And that's how some of us can be, or our children can be. You know, children, you're listening, right? Okay. Parents, you're listening too, right? But they can sometimes be so stubborn. I remember one time, I mean, I didn't do it hard or anything, but I don't know what he was doing or not doing, usually what he wasn't doing, but I picked him up by his shoulders and just sat him on the bed, and I said, "You're going to listen to me." Well, you know what he did? Next thing we know, he's writing a letter to his DARE officer, going to report us for child abuse. I know his mother told him, said, "Well, you don't know what abuse is yet. You just hang on a little bit." Well, love is kind. And we can discipline in a kind way. What always got to me is when you told a child or disciplined a child, and then they come with tears in their eyes and said, "Well, I'm so sorry. I love you." You know, that just, by the time the fifth child come around, there wasn't much discipline in our house. You know, we got wore out with the first few. But he said, love is kind. in the verse 4 also, and I got to hasten on with this, he said it envieth not. What does that mean? It's not jealous. Have you ever known love to be jealous? Love is not jealous. It's the fact that we portray it that way sometimes. It's not to be hateful. It's not, you know, even we're told to love our enemies. Somebody says it's natural to love them that love you. It's supernatural to love your enemies. We are to love those. Now, I'm not saying we love people. We got to understand that we don't have fellowship with everybody in this world. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is how we portray ourselves to others. If you think about it a moment, when we leave this building this morning, or even while we're in this building, when we leave this building, we still represent the God of glory. We still represent His Son, Jesus Christ. We represent that divine Trinity. We represent the very fact that we're children of God, and how we portray ourselves in the world leaves a lasting impact on a lot of people. I know my dad used to say, he said there was somebody that came to church, a boy that had hair way down. I didn't look to see if anybody had long hair this morning. I mean, way down their back. And somebody asked him, he said, well, you wouldn't invite somebody like that to church, would you? He said, yeah, I'd invite him, and then I'd give him a pair of scissors and let him cut it. Well, you know, there's a lot of ways to do things. I've known people that if that happened to come up, they'd say, well, we don't want you. We don't want you. But love doesn't envy. In other words, it's not jealous over the abilities, the successes, or anything else of other people. It's not. There are people that's got more than we got, a lot of them. There's people that's got a bigger house than we got. They maybe have a newer car. They might have this or that. But I'll tell you what, it doesn't matter. What you got, God gave you. What I've got, God gives you or enables us to have it. Don't think for a moment that you would have what you have if it wasn't by God's grace, walking in grace, and loving Him. Well, it doesn't envy. He says in verse 4 also, it vaunteth not itself. What does that mean? It doesn't make parade. You know, if maybe you have something. You know, one of my favorite movies of all times, It's a Wonderful Life. You see it at Christmas. If you've never seen it, I would go watch it. I mean, it's kind of far-fetched in some areas, but this angel, Clarence, hadn't won his wings. And we're not going to talk about angels' wings, only to say he came down to help this man, Mr. Bailey, that was ready to commit suicide. And the thought throughout that whole thing is what life would be if you had never been here. In other words, how many people have you affected? And if you've affected them, how have you affected them? Are they the kind that you affect yourself? It doesn't, in other words, what you have, you don't make parade of, and you walk out and say, well, look what I've got. And in reality, the fact is, love doesn't do that. Again, I say we should be thankful for what God gives us. And if God gave it to us, we ought to just praise Him every day for what He's given. He said it's not puffed up. It's not arrogant. It's not proud. You know, we're to live humbly. That's part of loving, is to live humbly. Humble ourselves under the mighty hand of God. I've heard people say, Lord, keep me humble. I would rather try to do it with God's grace and my help. He said, the way up is down and the way down is up. And if we humble ourselves under the mighty hand of God, casting all our cares on Him, for He careth for us. How great is it that it's not puffed up? It realizes that everything again that we have by the grace of God. Well, we're told in verse 5 then, it doth not behave itself unseemly. Love is never rude. And again, I can't stress that. And, you know, my wife gets on to me all the time. I'm from the north. I'm from northern Indiana originally. She's from central Georgia. Well, down there, everything's slow. People talk slow. They, so to speak, live slow. And now I forgot what I was going to get at on that particular point. But it's not rude. That's what I was after. It's not rude. And people in the north sometimes can portray things, but they're rude in the way that they don't mean it, in other words. That's just the way they are. And in the South, well, they can be rude down there too, but they do it in a slower way. So, they can be rude and you don't even know it for a while. And up north, if they're rude, you know it right away. It's just like saying hi to somebody on the street and how they respond. I've tried to make a habit of where I go. We go to our grandkids, some of their activities and so on. I try to talk to people. I try to have a smile on my face. I try to be joyous. That's what love is all about. That it is not puffed up. And why is it? Because we've got divine grace in our lives that teaches us not to be rude. It teaches us to be humble. You think about Jesus Christ on a number of occasions, even when they came to arrest him and had that mock trial. And you remember on one occasion they sought him and he said, "I am he." And they fell backward. It came to the time that he was going to that cross, which that proves to me he had the power to lay it down. He had the power to take it again. But he was humble through all of that. Now, I know one occasion he overthrew money changers. But I think he even did that in a kind way, if that's possible. So it's never rude. It seeketh not her own. It's not self-centered. If we say we love, we're not loving because of what we can gain out of it. We're loving because we're supposed to love. I've known, there's no place, and I've had the privilege to travel from California to Texas to Michigan to the East Coast and visit among Primitive Baptists and Primitive Baptist churches. I've learned a long time ago that they'll give you the best they have. They may not have much, but they'll do the best they can for you. I remember many years ago, possibly my father or some preacher up there, talked about going to a couple's home. And they, to spend the night at a meeting, and got to that home, and it was getting late, and they had never brought any dinner that night. Up north, it's supper, by the way. But they'd never brought any supper. And he was getting hungry, and he got to thinking, well, maybe they're not going to feed me. Well, pretty soon, the man came out and sat, or the woman came out and sat glasses of some kind at the table, and wrapped up some potatoes in tinfoil and threw them in the fireplace. It's what we call grilling today. But any case, pretty soon took those potatoes out, put one potato on each plate, and filled the glasses with water. And pretty soon, the gentleman, the brother that lived there, said to this preacher, "Let's sit down, and I want to thank God for the bounties of this table." Love gives you the best you have, and it enables you to give the best you have, regardless of how much that is. Love is, and I've told my wife this, love is when you come home from a day's work and the house is a mess. You never have that, right? You come home, stuff scattered everywhere, and you still tell them, "Well, how was your day?" And you try to encourage them rather than walking in that door and saying, "What have you been doing all day? I mean, you haven't done a thing." But be encouraging. And you know, sometimes this might be hard for some men, but it doesn't hurt for you to pick up things either. Sometimes I'll do that. And you know, I don't go overboard, but I'll do that sometimes. And so it's never selfish or self-centered, I should say. Jesus Christ, of course, is still a prime example. It's not easily provoked. What I think on that is you don't have a record book, or nowadays a computer with Excel in it, and you form columns. And then, you know, I do that a lot, not for this, but I do that. You form a column, and one column you put down date. One column you put time of day. One column you put what was done. And one column you might put, did somebody thank you for it? Or, you know, whatever you want to put. And what I'm saying is that we don't keep record of what we've done on the basis of love. We just do it because it's love. We do it because we're supposed to do it. And whether you ever get any credit or not, you know, I kind of like credit from a human standpoint, right? So maybe you don't. That's fine. But human beings generally like credit for something. It's like our children. They like credit. They pick up the room by throwing everything under the bed. And just because the room looks okay, they want credit for that. And sometimes I'll do something and she may not say a word. And I'll say, later on, I shouldn't do this, I realize, but later on I'll say, "Well, you know what I did? I did this or I did that." And I do it because of love, but we should not be self-centered with it. We should do it. Just realizing that's what we're to do, whether anybody ever says a word or not. But it's sort of like, and I go back to children because I have had a lot of experience in that. The fact of, you don't always tell a child just when they do something wrong. It's easy to do that. You tell them go do something, they don't do it. You get on to them. Later on, you come back and they haven't done it. You get it on to them again. But sometimes you got to tell them, "Well, you've ate your meal. You've done a good job. You've done this or that." You know, positive feedback helps a lot of times. And sometimes that helps adults. But again, you understand what I'm talking about with love, that it's not seeking. I guess you could say it's not self-centered, it's not seeking praise. It's not easily provoked, it doesn't keep evil. It thinketh no evil, which I believe just means it doesn't take any inventory of what was done. But it rejoiceth not in iniquity, Love does not rejoice in sin. And I want to touch on this just briefly. There have been people in this world, unfortunately, probably some of the Lord's people, that love it when somebody may be in a church or somewhere that they don't particularly like has a problem. That's not love, but it happens. When somebody has a problem, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to pray for them. We're supposed to help them. We're supposed to encourage them. Sometimes it's more than prayer that a person needs. Sometimes it's that telephone call. Sometimes it's a card. Nobody ever sends cards anymore. It's e-cards. But, you know, whatever, be encouraging to that person. Say, if I can help you in any way, let me help. That's what love is. And from that standpoint, it rejoiceth not in iniquity. By the way, true love doesn't do something else. And I'm sure you don't do this here, that's fine. But true love doesn't gossip. You know what gossip is? It's a mess. It's sin. It's destroys people's lives. It does all kinds of things that it shouldn't do. It shouldn't be done. And what do I mean by gossip? Telling somebody. I've tried to live with this pattern that if it's something that's not going to help to tell someone else, don't tell it. If it's not going to be encouraged and encouraging to someone else, don't say it. If it's not something they need to know, don't say a word. Gossip does nothing. One of the best examples I ever heard of that is a man one time that had said something about someone, and it caused that man that it was said about great tragedy in his life, great amount of heartache. And the man that said it, the other man went to him, and he said, I want you to picture this for a moment. The man apologized for saying it, and the man accepted his apology. But he said, I want to tell you a story. If someone goes out over this mountain out here and takes a feather pillow, you know what feather pillow, pillow with feathers in it, and he opens it and spreads it all over, and the wind picks it and blows it all across that mountain. Then I tell him later to go back and gather up all those feathers. It's not going to work, is it? He'll never be able to gather it up. Once it's said, it's said. And he tells us that it rejoiceth not in iniquity. Love doesn't do that. And it doesn't rejoice when someone falls or is hurt. It rejoices in the truth. Love hates all forms of evil. It hates all false doctrines. It doesn't respond. You know, I saw a lot of churches driving down here that were a whole lot closer than this one. But I had a pretty good idea of what most of them, by their religious sign, what they believed. I wanted to go somewhere where the truth was at. I wanted to go somewhere that I could rejoice in the truth. Somewhere where we can come together. It loves truth, and where truth's proclaimed. It loves the victory that we have in Jesus Christ. Not by what we've done, but by what he's done. He tells us in verse 7, it beareth all things. It patiently endures and overlooks the faults of others. By the way, there is, and I know time's gone, but we've got farther to go than anyone else. So when we think about this fact, that there are people. I've been in a few churches in my life that I won't say much about them, only there were probably people in there. In fact, I was sure there were people in there that just wanted to pick out what the preacher said wrong. Now, there might be things that you can get away with. If you want to talk about the color of my tie, you can forget it. My wife picked it out. If you want to talk about how I'm dressed, that's nothing. If you want to talk about because I misquoted a verse, we do that, believe it or not. There's some things that it doesn't matter whether anybody says anything about it or not. Now, if I'm preaching some false doctrine, that's different. You have every right and authority to come. But just to be there, it's like somebody said one time, somebody might walk in, fold their arms, sit on the back row, and said, "Now, preacher, preach if you can." And I'll tell you what, that person's not going to get anything out of it. And even if the preacher's blessed to preach, he's not going to get anything out of it with that attitude and that frame of mind. It believeth all things. And we'll just touch on these quickly. Now, it doesn't mean that it's going to believe false doctrine and such. It doesn't mean that. It basically means that the truth's preached. It's going to have the best interpretation of that truth based on Scripture. And it hopeth all things. Love expects the best outcome, doesn't it? It should. It endureth all things. That actually comes from a military term that love doesn't give up the fort. It's not going to give up. Have you ever felt like giving up? I think we all have, sometime or another. You know, I've tried to preach since 1973 or 74, and there's been a lot of times. When I was younger, people would say things all the time, totally against what I'm preaching. But they'd say things all the time to me or someone else or to my wife. Now, if you want to say something, say it to me, not her. And she'd probably deal with it maybe better than I would. But when I was younger, it was hard. All that criticism as a younger preacher. Now I got older, I can deal with it a lot better. I usually know. And somebody told me one time to consider the source. And if the source is a faithful individual in the Lord's house, well, then heed. If it's someone that just, as I mentioned a moment ago, trying to pick out things, don't worry about it too much. And so in any case, it expects the best outcome, it endureth all things, and charity never faileth. If we do all of this, is it possible? Well, it should be. He gives it to us. There are times when, and let me explain what I'm about to say. There are times that love may lose a battle. Now, love never fails, so it's not going to mean what you think it's going to mean. There are times when love may lose a battle in the fact that the object of one's love never returns it. You may be the nicest to someone you can be, and if they don't return it, there's not much you can do other than continue to be nice and love them. But love has won the war. It has always won the war. It will continue to win the war. And walking in grace, living with grace and walking in love are two of the greatest things we can do. Grace has got us this far, and grace will take us home. May God bless you is my prayer. I appreciate your very kind attention.